Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, if that didn't have put a spring in your step, Lynn Woolley, I don't know what will. Hello, Texas, and welcome to this week's edition of the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle. We're here in the Talk 1370 Right Choice Worldwide Headquarters. Governor Lynn Woolley is in the studio sitting right across me, feverishly breaking down, and as the doctor of logic, analyzing the week's political and economic and you name it type of developments. As we always like to say, you're either an insider or you're not. Be sure and check us out at texasinsider.org, where we post about a half dozen articles every day to keep you on the inside of Texas politics. And also check us out at Texas Insider for Facebook and Twitter followers. And Lynn, I'm thrilled today. We got all this Portland stuff, the Austin ISD picked a new superintendent this week. We're not going to be able to talk about that. We've had some job numbers, I don't know, that we'll refer to or not, but we're going to break down one of the other big things for Texas insiders and people here in Austin that follow the Texas Capitol development. So old Glenn Hager, the comptroller, gave us some updates earlier in the week regarding the next legislative session and what the budget's going to look like. And as a result, we've got our old friend and one of the state's preeminent budget analysts, Dale Kramer, joining us. So I'm going to eliminate and cut through the riffraff and just get down and dirty here with you, Lynn, and talk about some of the Portland developments this week. It's just these riots all over the country, the amount of crime that's going on across the country. We've all seen the numbers this week, but here we had former vice president, And we're watching MSNBC here in the studio television. Don't tell anybody what we're watching, but they're talking about how the president is politicizing the rioting and the looting and the destruction of federal property. And people don't realize, it hasn't been in the news, the police are under attack up in Portland. Joe Biden has called the mob in Portland, Oregon this week peaceful, quote, peaceful protesters, never mind, you know, you and I, Lynn, that they're armed with metal pipes and hammers and slingshots. They're trying to take over the Mark Hatfield, a former senator that I used to know up in Washington, D.C. 30 years ago. He's passed away now, but he was a scholar and a gentleman and did a fine job of representing Oregon. And we've got suburbanites across America and citizens across America, I think, got to be worried for their safety amongst a defund the police. What's your read on Portland this week? It's just blowing my mind, frankly.
Jim, I think the United States of America, the USA, is now the United States of Anarchy. And when you've got leadership like this mayor in Portland, Ted Wheeler, who goes out on July the 22nd, joins the rioters, got tear gassed himself.
He did.
And a couple of things about Ted Wheeler. He's out there saying, yes, Black Lives Matter. And he doesn't mean black lives. He's talking about the Black Lives Matter organization. That's what matters to him. And while he's chanting Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter is chanting back at him, go away, resign, get out of here. We don't like you. Even if you're for us, we don't like you.
They booed him as he was speaking to them.
And this guy, who does not want law and order, who has actually gone to court to try to get Donald Trump to take the federal agents out of Portland, guess what, Jim? He's surrounded by his own personal security guards, paid for by the taxpayers of Portland, who are not getting police protection for their downtown area and for their shops and their businesses or even their homes.
He, this week, you're referring to, I think it was Wednesday night, he went down in the protesters' crowds. I've got a long list. It's 4 pages long from the acting secretary Chad Wolf, condemning the rampant, long-lasting violence in Portland. There's over 100 acts of violence that the police have documented since the end of May. Mm-hmm. You're talking about these protesters pointing lasers that can destroy your eyesight at police officers. They're pointing lasers at commercial aircraft and police aircraft. They're carrying tasers and stun guns, Molotov cocktails. And here, Mr. Wheeler, that you refer to, who's the mayor as well as the police chief, because they're all rolled into one up there, he says Wednesday night, the reason I'm here is to stand with you. And he gets booed and has an opportunity to get tear gassed right after that. And how can somebody not understand that? What kind of elected officials? I'm going to quote and let you respond to this, and then we'll go to commercial break. Thomas Sowell, one of our favorite African-American philosophers, political prognosticators, he said the other day, we've reached the ultimate stage of absurdity where some people are held responsible for things that happened before they were born, while other people are not held responsible for what they themselves are doing today.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Thomas Sowell, if you don't know, he's an African-American guy. I put him in the same category with people like Larry Elder, Walter Williams, Ken Hamblin, so many great black political thinkers who are being totally ignored in this situation. Jim, a couple of things come to mind for me. Number one, I might want to ask you your opinion on this. We have a mayor here in Austin named Steve Adler. Now, we're not having this type of rioting and looting in Austin. Thank God
for that. Yeah.
But how different do you think Ted Wheeler is from Steve Adler?
I would guess not all that different, although, and philosophically, although what he's allowing up there, as you said, thank the good Lord above that we don't have it happening here in Austin, because the people, I would guess, are here and they have mobilized.
And here's the other question I have for you. If you take an extreme on one side versus an extreme on the other side, what do you think Trump ought to do? On the one side, I would say probably the right side, politically speaking, is to protect that courthouse. That's federal property.
Yep.
He's got a mandate to do it. Send in however many troops. He's thinking of mobilizing 60,000 troops to divide up and send to these various cities and protect the people, protect the stores, the businesses, and the lives of the people. Or on the far other side, which you could call the left side, say, these are cities that are asking us to stay out. They don't want our help. Mm-hmm. They don't want federal agents in there. Mm-hmm. They are standing with the protesters who are anarchists and rioters and looters. Should we leave these cities to their own devices, let the cities burn down, and then when they finally ask us to come in, say, who are you again?
A lot of political analysts on the Democrat side are worried that the Democrats are allowing themselves to be taken over and have this, in fact, be the face of their
It is the face of their party.
And
Louie Gohmert has introduced a bill saying that while we're canceling culture, Democrats must drop the name Democrats because it's too involved with the Ku Klux Klan.
We'll get to that. There's the first quarter of the Texas Insider Show, folks. Right after this first commercial break, as I mentioned before, we're going to visit with Dale Kramer, the comptroller, and this coronavirus are impacting our city budgets, our state budgets, our county budgets. It's been flying under the radar, but we need to talk about it because it's going to have a huge impact. We'll be right back.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, good job there, Brad, coming back in for the second quarter of the Texas Insider Show. Folks, appreciate you joining us. Brad and Casey whispering in my ear. Here's some breaking news with a little Fleetwood Mac bumper music. Peter Green, the co-founder of Fleetwood Mac and guitarist, Peter Green has passed away here this morning, evidently, and has a special place in many people's hearts, Lynn Woolley, over the years. The history, golly, remember in the mid-70s when that Rumors album came out and shot to the top and sat there as the most popular
those were the days when music was still awesome and rock and roll was really rock and roll. I don't know what's happened to music, but we're losing the old... masters, and there goes another one.
Yes, yes, yes. Peter Green, the co-founder and guitarist from Fleetwood Mac, passes away at 73. Thanks, Casey and Brad. And as I mentioned here before the break, we're going to transition from one semi-sad piece of news to another semi-interest. I'll say it's interesting piece of news. We've got the state budget of Texas and the state budgets of every state in the nation, not to mention the cities and so on and so forth, being impacted. Just take, for instance, folks, the tourism business that we have here in Austin is fallen through the floor and gone to zero. And yet the city budget, I think, in Austin is about 47% based on sales taxes. And that happens across every city in the state. But Comptroller Glenn Hager came out the other day on Monday with his revenue estimate update. And here's the Austin American-Statesman from Tuesday says, in October, Texas Comptroller Glenn Hager predicted Texas would have a budget surplus of nearly $3 billion at the end of fiscal year. Then the twin shocks of the oil crash and the coronavirus hit. On Monday, Hager revised that projection from a $3 billion surplus to a shortfall of $4.5 billion. And for you Aggies and left coasters who may have relocated here to Austin, Lynn Woolley totaled that up, and that's about a $7.5 billion swing. But as I mentioned before, Dale Kramer is one of the state's preeminent budget analysts. He runs and is president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. Check them out at TTARA if you want to know what's going on the inside of Texas budgeting and politics. Dale Kramer, appreciate you coming back and joining us today. How are you?
Jim, always a pleasure.
Give me your thoughts here. I know you were watching, I believe you said, during the week when we were lining things up, everybody was watching online or streaming, however that happens. But tell us, what did the comptroller say and what do you make of it here? Because we got the session coming at us faster than we think, probably.
Well, our comptroller, Glenn Hager, surprised no one this week by putting out a revised revenue estimate, basically indicating that we've gone, the state budget at least has gone from a surplus to a deficit. Now, one of the things that folks may not realize is Glenn is basically the budget referee.
Okay.
And under the Texas Constitution, he's our chief revenue estimator. He says how much revenue the legislature has available to spend, and they've got to live with those numbers. So he basically is an independent referee making sure that our fiscal house is in order.
Okay.
So he had looked at the budget that the legislature passed last year, and as you mentioned, we were in good shape, close to a $3 billion surplus. To put some perspective on that, Jim, that's about a 2.5% surplus. So
okay.
it, it's $1 billion is a lot of money to us, but to government, it all too often is not. But we went from about 2.5% to the good to about 4% to the bad. Now, even though we face a deficit of about $4.6 billion, we've got over $8 billion in the rainy day fund. So this is a manageable shortfall that the legislature is facing. But this is just to close out our current budget. When the gavel drops in January and lawmakers meet again in Austin, they're going to be writing the next state budget, and at that point, the numbers are going to look even worse.
And that's a very good point, because we've got the benefit here in Texas. The legislature only meets every other year, and when they do, they write a two-year budget. So we're right in the middle of a two-year budget, and the legislators pass that budget based on the comptroller's projections. And now what he's saying, if I read your comments right, what he's saying is that the assumptions you wrote your budget under have changed, and we're going to have less money than we anticipated.
Absolutely. I mean, no one clearly could have anticipated what we're going through right now. So the controller basically is just telling us this is, you know, that was then, this is now, and right now you've got some issues to deal with.
However, I did see, and it was interesting, Senator Jane Nelson, when Comptroller Glenn Hager was appearing the other day, Senate Finance Committee Chairman Jane Nelson asked him if, quote, would you agree we'll need to tighten our belts next session? And Hager said, yes, we're going to have to reduce spending. Everybody knows that education and health care make up about 80 to 85%. What do you think about all that?
I think everything is going to be on the table, but
everything.
Governor Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Patrick, Speaker Bonin have already sent out a letter to state agencies telling them, look at your current budget, figure out ways to cut at least 5%, bring us the numbers, and we're going to work through them. So, well, we do have the rainy day fund as a cushion to rely on. The first step that leadership is going to take is going to be to squeeze as much as it can out of the current budget.
Okay, folks, again, we're visiting with Dale Kramer, one of our frequent guests and friends and preeminent budget analyst here with the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. Used to work for the comptroller himself, and as I won't date you, Dale, and mention how many decades you've got, but it's substantial. Lynn Woolley, you got any thoughts on this?
Well, I wanted to ask Dale a question and then maybe a follow-up, but if the two reasons that we're having this massive shortfall are the coronavirus pandemic on the one hand and then an oil situation on the other hand, it seems like to me that, I'd just be interested to know which one of those is the most severe problem.
Right now, I think it's clearly the pandemic, because that is hampering our economy. That's keeping people in their homes. That's slowing things down. I mean, we've dealt with the ups and downs of oil and gas for years, and we're all old hands and know how to deal with that. But right now, the pandemic, obviously, is a huge question mark. We don't know how bad it's going to get, how long it's going to be bad, and when folks are going to start feeling comfortable reengaging in the economy.
And Dale, that's exactly what I expected you to say, because oil is kind of cyclical. It's up and down. It's a commodity, and it depends on world markets. But the pandemic is more in our control, it seems to me. Can we then control this situation a little bit more by really trying to work through these shutdowns and deciding who's essential and what's not essential? Somebody told me not long ago that the coronavirus, as we know it, may be with us for 5 or 6 years. It could be with us for longer than that. So we've got to create some kind of a new normal situation. So can't we alleviate this situation by figuring out ways to get the economy started and leave it started, whether it's masks or hand sanitizer or whatever we have to do? But it seems like to me we can control this by figuring out ways to get the country, and in this case the state, working again.
Absolutely. Lynn, I think you're spot on. I think, you know, what the governor has told us is that we know that wearing masks slows the virus down, makes it harder to spread. That's a huge step in making people feel comfortable to go outside their homes and reengage. And once we do that, and we're starting to see the numbers already plateauing, and hopefully we're dealing with the worst of it right now. But I'm not a public health expert, but I certainly agree. The experts seem to be saying these types of viruses are very hard to fight. Even if you develop the antibodies, they may only last a few months. And if that's the case, we're going to have to put a lot of faith in science over the next couple of years to help us get this under control.
Okay, Dale Kramer with the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association is our guest. Be sure and check them out at ttara.org, Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. Dale, stick with us. We got to take a break for the news here at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, though, big development this week with the Tesla announcement that they're going to put a nice little plant over near the airport and start making, I think they're calling it a cyber pickup truck. But we're going to ask you about that when we come back after the news right here on the Texas Insider Show at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. Oh, good job there, Brad. A little Van Halen coming back in for the second half of this week's Texas Insider Show. Appreciate you joining us, folks. We're here every weekend to get you up to speed on the Texas and national politics. As we always like to say, you're either an insider or you're not. When I say we, I'm talking about Jim Cardle, myself, and our compatriot Lynn Woolley, Texas radio icon, and frequent guests like Dale Kramer that we're visiting with today to make sure you know what's going on the inside of Texas politics. Be sure and check us out at texasinsider.org or on Facebook and Twitter, just at Texas Insider, where we got about 45,000 followers and growing. And Dale Kramer, really appreciate you taking the time to give us some thoughts here on, first, the comptrollers. This is a big deal because it's flying under the radar. Cities and state budgets across the nation, if you're in this business, you see a little bit about it, but it is going to be having ripple effects for years, certainly. And I appreciated your comments there about the, it's not the new normal, but we just have to accept a new degree of flexibility in our personal lives, but economically is what I'm really appreciating your comments on. And as I mentioned before the break, boy, howdy, did we have a big announcement this week. I'm looking at the Thursday front page of the Austin Un-American Statesperson, as I commonly refer to it as, since we don't want him to be misogynistic and be a statesman. But here, Tesla picks Austin. Some of you will have seen the picture of Governor Greg Abbott and Elon Musk in the governor's office giving the hook 'em horn sign. This article says one of the largest economic development projects in Austin's history, electric automaker Tesla says it will build a $1.1 billion assembly plant in Travis County that will employ 5,000 people. I guess, Dale, it's going to be over there by the Austin airport. Jobs
Del Valley.
Yeah, Del Valley. Jobs will start at $35,000 a year, counting benefits. And evidently we're doing something right. Give us your read, Dale Kramer, on what this might mean for our city and our state.
Well, you know, Jim, Texas is a fabulous place to do business, and we're centrally located to both coasts. We've got rational regulatory policies. We've got rational tort laws. We're a right-to-work state. I mean, there's a lot to like about Texas. Unfortunately, one of the things we do have are very high property taxes, basically the price we pay for not having a personal income tax. But our property taxes are about 65% higher than the rest of the nation. So Tesla is looking at this plant. They're looking at multiple states, and they wanted to come here to Texas, but the property tax bill was just too much. They said, if you'll work with us, we'll work with you. We were able to work out arrangements with Tesla. They're going to save some money on their property tax bill. They're going to save $65 million. And overall, and that's the number that the press is going to report, that they're getting $65 million in tax breaks.
Okay.
Well, all that is a discount from what Tesla pays. What the papers aren't reporting is over the life of this project, they're going to pay $165 million in property taxes. So we've got property out there sitting fallow that's generating nothing for the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Tesla's coming in. They're going to pay $165 million in property taxes. They're going to hire 5,000 people. This is a marquee project that any state would just be thrilled to win.
Dale, I was curious to ask you about one thing. I remember the Amazon deal, one of the few that Austin didn't get. I mean, we got a big Apple campus, and we got the Military Futures Command, and now Tesla.
Now, Lynn, before you ask that question, I need to warn Dale that Lynn Woolley is one of the biggest Longhorn and Austin fans and aficionados you'll ever. So be careful.
It's a great town. But I was going to mention when Amazon.com chose Queens, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez chased them away, and it reminded me of the fact that Austin made Round Rock into a big city with multiple 6A high schools because Austin wouldn't work with Dell. So, and Dell went to Round Rock,
very
which is
point.
Still in the area. But this Tesla thing, why did they give him the tax incentives? They wouldn't give them to Michael Dell.
Well, you know, Tesla is I don't think they're in the city limits. City property taxes may not be an issue for them. But the county taxes and the school taxes most certainly were. And Amazon was looking in the city limits, too. But, you know, Lynn, it brings up an interesting point about this stuff is people look and they see these incentives that companies are getting and they think, oh, that's coming out of my pocket. But it's not. It's basically We're just telling these companies, you build here, we'll let you pay a little less than you might otherwise. All we're doing is telling them, you still write us a check. You just write us a little smaller check than what you would have otherwise.
Dale, I got to ask you again, folks. We're visiting with Dale Kramer, the president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. You can check them out at TTARA, the premier tax and budget organization here in our state, or I'll say one of them not to offend anybody else, but Dale really is a preeminent, well-regarded, most well-regarded expert over there in the state capital. Although, Dale, you and I have joked before that an economist is only a accountant with a sense of humor, right? So consider that. But I did see the other day that, and it refers to what you just mentioned here last week. If folks go to Texas Insider, they'll see an announcement from our Texas Workforce Commission. Announcement last week said that the Texas economy added about 250,000 private sector jobs in June. I got to get your read before we let you go here in a couple minutes. Texas is kind of adjusting to the coronavirus bump this week, but economically, what are you seeing?
In all honesty, Jim, I think some months are going to look really good. Some months are going to look really bad. We're going to have a really choppy recovery. And as Lynn mentioned earlier, we can't discount the fact that as long as oil prices are weak, that's going to be a drag. So, we're going to see some really good numbers some months, and we're going to see some really scary numbers some months.
Okay, Lynn, I'm sorry. I got to dominate the conversation here because I got one more question that we got to squeeze in. Dale, you and I stay in touch, and you help me stay up to speed on what's going on with the tax situation, the tax rolls, the tax appraisals, our tax bills. You've talked about it before, and you're one of your primary goals I've always appreciated is getting taxpayers engaged in how to change their tax bill, because it's not a complicated equation. You've got the value of your home times the tax rate equals your tax bill, and you cannot impact your appraisal value, but you can impact your tax rate. And we've got a big day coming up on Monday. Texas insiders need to know about what's going on Monday with the big tax day and appraisals.
Well, what's happening is Monday is the day that the chief appraisers are going to give all the taxing units an estimate of what their tax roll is, what
so
the
you're
total
talking
value
about
that
the,
they can tax.
You're talking about the MUDs, the ISDs, the cities, the counties. I think you've told me there's like 47 different taxing entities and types of taxing entities in the state, right?
Yeah, and then multiply that by thousands of each of those jurisdictions that there is. But so what's going to happen now? Right now, Jim, hey, I got great news for you and Lynn both.
Okay.
Today, your property tax bill is zero because nobody's adopted their tax rates. On Monday, they're going to get their tax rolls.
Can we pay early and just lock that in, you know?
Well, unfortunately, on Monday, that's going to start to change because the local jurisdictions are going to get an estimate of what their tax base is, and they're going to figure out how much money they want to raise, and they're going to start adopting their tax rate. So this is the time when typically it's the dog days of summer. People have challenged their appraisal. They got a value that they either think is fair or not, but they're going to live with it. Starting Monday is when local jurisdictions start adopting those tax rates that are going to determine the size of your bill. Now, the legislature did something really good this last session. They lowered the limit. Local jurisdictions used to be able to raise 8% new property tax revenue every year. The legislature lowered that to 3.5%. Now, Jim, I'm going to give you a quiz right now.
Okay, I'm ready.
Last year, the highest a city could raise their property taxes before voters could weigh in was 8%.
Mm-hmm.
Your quiz question, how much did the city of Austin raise their property taxes last year?
8.5%.
Well, 8%. Yeah, they hit the actual maximum.
Gotcha.
This year, even though it's 3.5%, how much does the city want to raise your property tax?
Well, probably 8%. Well, but 3.5%.
They've got the coronavirus exemption that they might be able to finagle, right?
Well, they're still looking at the 3.5% maximum. So the bottom line, though, is people focus on their values, but ultimately they really need to pay attention to tax rates. And you can contact your local jurisdictions. There is a website called travistaxes.org. That'll be available. Folks can pull up their property, see every taxing unit they pay property taxes to. They'll be able to see what tax rate those units are proposing. And the greatest thing of that website is it'll give you a link that you can click on to send off an email to all of the commissioners and city council people and MUD directors that are going to be voting on those tax rates so you can tell them what you think. So go to travistaxes.org and look at those properties, look at those proposed tax rates, and weigh in.
Dale, what makes me crazy in this situation that we're in is that the government at various levels, federal, state, and city, have decided what businesses are essential. So let's say that you're Walmart, you're an essential business. If you're a liquor store, you're an essential business. If you're an abortion clinic in some states, you're an essential business. But if you run a gym or a bar or a mom and pop retail store and you're considered non-essential, the government has used their power to put you out of business because of the coronavirus. Whether that's right or wrong for health is not the issue right now. It's the fact that they will come and want their taxes anyway.
Absolutely. The property tax is basically an unavoidable tax. The only way to avoid the property tax is to not own property, and that's just a scourge on the American dream. We all want to be property owners.
Well, Dale, we all want to have the access and the benefit to hear more of your insight, but we're going to have to shut her down and take a commercial break. We really appreciate you joining us.
Happy to be here.
Okay, folks, Dale Kramer, a little update on the state budget and the Texas economy, property taxes. As he said, be sure and check out travistaxes.org. Check out Dale Kramer and the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association at TTARA. And when we come back, Lynn Woolley, I'm going to ask you a question or two. Has the race for president started yet? I keep hearing that it's already over. We'll see if that's the case or not. Right here on Talk 1370 with the Texas Insider Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us on this week's edition of the Texas Insider Radio Show with Jim Cardle and Lynn Woolley. I appreciate you tuning in and staying on the inside of Texas and national politics. Be sure and check us out when you can, where you can, however you can. Just go to texasinsider.org, where we post about a half dozen to a dozen articles keeping you on the inside of Texas politics every day, or follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well at just Texas Insider. Like to keep you, as we always say, you're either an insider or not. And Lynn Woolley, great stuff there from Dale Kramer. Again, folks, if you want to check out more about the upcoming economic forecast, go to TTARA and the TexasTax.org and the Texas Taxpayers Research Association. But Lynn Woolley, we got just under 10 minutes here to go, and we got tons of stuff and lots of ground to cover. I'm going to start off with this because I've been talking about the polls. I want to get your input on the polls. People don't understand that the polling industry is going through a semi-out-of-body experience after the debacle of 4 years ago when they all predicted that Hillary Clinton was a shoe-in and a lock. People aren't answering their cell phones anymore. When they do their phones anymore, it's illegal to poll and robo-dial on cell phones, in case any of you are wondering why you don't get any polling questions on your cell phones. But 4 years ago in mid-July, Lynn, all the polls said that Hillary Clinton was leading Donald Trump by 12 to 15 points. That's just exactly where Joe Biden is supposedly leading him now. 4 years ago, 55% of those surveyed said they would never vote for Donald Trump, while just 43% said the same thing, they'd never vote for Hillary Clinton. So what I'm saying is, what we think we know, we don't always know. When Donald Trump was elected in 2016, I remember talking to some people up in some of my friends in Washington, D.C., and they would describe going out to get the newspaper the next morning, and people weren't speaking to each other. They had blank stares on their faces. The same experts that projected, not only 4 years ago, but go all the way back to Ronald Reagan was not ever leading Jimmy Carter, and he won. John Kerry was beating George Bush. Al Gore was beating George W. Bush. All these pollsters, but yet Americans saw something and they wanted to make America great again. And yet here we are in this day and age is the point of all this. It's as if the election's already over if you believe these so-called quote-unquote experts, but yet it hasn't even begun.
Polling is a political tactic, Jim, and they use the polls as a political weapon. So here's the thing that struck me as you were saying that. There was a story, I saw it yesterday. I guess this is a poll, but 62% of the American people do not want to talk about politics at all because of the current political climate. Coronavirus has been politicized.
You can't even talk to your friends
about it. You can't even eat Wuhan bat soup anymore without somebody complaining. So 62% of the American people don't want to give their opinion. Now, if 62% of the American people, and the majority of those were on the right side of the political aisle, self-identified, and to a smaller extent, it was also true on the Democrat side. So when a pollster calls and says, are you going to vote for Trump or Biden? These people half the time hang up on them.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that pollsters are basically just dropping telephone surveys. Mm-hmm. They just don't work anymore. They consider that a nuisance call in the first place. But if they don't want to talk about it, I am convinced deep down in the logical depths of my toenails even,
okay,
that there is a great American majority out there that is silent right now, that doesn't like the idea that America's big cities are burning and Democrats are cheering them on,
mm-hmm,
that doesn't like the idea that priceless artifacts, statues, monuments to our past, to a long-gone past. And I heard somebody wrote in a column not too long ago, these are relics of a bygone era. Well, yeah, that's kind of what statues and monuments are, are relics of a bygone era. Yeah, I get that. I think there's a great unwashed majority that don't like this. They may support putting a plaque up to explain the statue, or they may support putting a statue of Harriet Tubman or Frederick Douglass or Martin Luther King up next to it, or on the opposite corner of the courthouse lawn, something like that. But I don't think the majority of the American people are going to vote for this continued mob violence by Marxist organizations.
And speaking of things that are relics of the past, Donald Trump announced yesterday or the day before that the Republican convention is going to be pared back. The Democrats had already announced a couple weeks before that they're probably going to have like 300 people at their convention in Milwaukee, starting with the nominee Joe Biden. These things are done to invigorate the base, to raise a lot of money, to recruit manpower.
Bet you Biden shows up in Minneapolis instead.
You think?
He won't remember which city.
But tell us, my thought is, here we are, Joe Biden's campaigning from the basement. Is that going to fly for much longer?
I don't think so. There is the little matter of the debates. And here's the thing about this. This is not original with me. Mark Thiessen, who is on Fox and Friends and some of those shows from time to time, has this in a
column. Used to be a White House speechwriter.
Yes, and he's now with the Washington Post Writers Group. Okay. He said this, Trump is lowering the bar for Biden in the debates. That is, by making fun of his cognitive abilities. He should be raising the bar for Biden. Trump should be talking about what an experienced debater Biden is. He's participated in so many debates during more than four decades as a politician in Washington. Mm-hmm. And then if Biden comes out and Trump has been making fun of his cognitive abilities, people are going to feel sorry for him,
mm-hmm,
and they're going to give him a pass. If Trump builds Biden up and says, hey, here's an experienced debater, and then Biden comes out and flubs it, and Trump looks over at him at the debate and says, Joe, I didn't understand a word you just said, but I'm awfully sorry that you're having this problem, and I hope you get better.
He's really got to finesse it.
That
to be
debate
careful.
Would be won at that point. It would mm-hmm. be like Ronald Reagan saying to Walter Mondale, I'm not going to let my opponent's youthful inexperience stop me from liking him, or whatever it was he said. The debate was won at that point, and Biden may not be able to debate well, but he may have a well-tested consultant written zinger ready to go.
I'm sure.
And the zingers are what people remember.
Yeah, and then there's the question of the vice presidential pick. Joe Biden was on the news this week from his basement talking a little bit about who he's going to choose.
It looks like Warren right now, doesn't it?
I just don't get it, frankly, how Joe Biden announces that he's number one going to pick a woman, and number two, it's going to be a minority, and nobody's claiming that he's racist or sexist.
Well, no, that's not racist or sexist if you're a Democrat. But the inside track right now seems to be Elizabeth Warren, and Trump is going to have a field day with Papoose. No, wait a minute, it's not Pocahontas.
Uh-huh. And you've got two Northeasterners at that point.
Mm-hmm.
No breadth across the country to tie down a Minnesota when Amy Klobuchar was talked about, or California with Kamala Harris. We got a minute left, Lynn. I just want to get your circle back to where we started. Crimes up in New York City, where shootings have increased 358%. In Atlanta, murders are up 86%. In Minneapolis, shootings are up 47%. In Philadelphia, shootings involving children are up 43%.
You have reached 911. If you will leave your phone number, we will call you back. Estimated waiting time, 2 days.
Not going to fly.
Not going to fly.
Okay, folks, we got to put a plug in the jug, as my friend, the doctor of logic, always says, Lynn Woolley. Great show today. Dale Kramer, again, thanks for joining us. And check out Texas Taxpayers and Research Association at TTARA. Also, be sure and check out Texas Insider when you can, how you can.
Remember, be logical, and you're an insider.
Or you're not, folks. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next weekend. I've been looking for someone like you to save me. Life's too easy to be so damn complicated. Take your time and I'll be waiting. Keep me in mind. Somewhere down the road you might get lonely. Keep me in mind. And I pray someday that you will love me only. Think about you some days and the way I would lay wasting day after day with you. We always go our separate ways.